What's up? Welcome to episode 19 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I'm Kofi Outlaw here with my co-host, Matt Mueller, a.k.a. Geek Culture's Desus and Mero.
Hey!
Yeah! You like that,
I
right?
I like that.
Wow.
You got that reference. And today we're here with ruining this whole association I just made. Producer Jim Viscardi is back in front of the camera with us today.
Hello, hello, hello.
And today, we have quite a bit to get to. We are going to burn through a bunch of news items that have dropped over the weekend and leading up till now, since we last talked to you guys. We're also going to get deep into some new comics that are out this week. And, of course, as the title says, we are going to be talking about a brand new Avengers Endgame trailer. The best one yet.
Best one.
And, like with everything with this film, we have more questions than answers. The more we actually see of it.
We got some answers.
Yeah, we got a few.
Yeah, and then they spark more questions, as we'll get to. So, let's get into it. Before we do, we'll do our full plug at the end, but if you are liking Comic Book Nation, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio, or you can find new episodes every week on the site. We post them every Wednesday or Friday. So, talking to our news flash this week. First things, we're going to be all over the place. I mean,
yeah,
we cover we do widespread things here at comicbook.com. We are a total geek culture service site. And today we're going to be going all over the full game, like the full run of it. So we're going to start with a little bit of anime news. And we are going to be talking about a movie that has been in development limbo longer than I've been in this business, which is a decade now. And that's the Hollywood adaptation of Akira. The famous anime movie that basically kind of, for a lot of Westerners in America, was probably one of the biggest milestones in pushing anime on these shores. And we've been hearing about a movie possibly coming together. I remember I was excited about one with the Hughes brothers, almost did it. Mm-hmm. The guys who did like From Hell and Book of Eli. So it's been through a lot of hands. But right now we're hearing that it's gotten a tax credit to start filming in California. And Taika Waititi, the director of Thor Ragnarok, will be helming it with Leonardo DiCaprio as a producer. So
weird.
It's a weird combination, right? But like...
But you had me at Taika.
Yeah, I mean, Taika's name is like gold right now, and I think he has a shot of doing it. I just don't know if it's going to be like the serious, dramatic Akira we might be hoping for. Taika has a way of kind of turning things on their head. So I'd be interested to see how this is. I mean, I think my guts are still in knots about this because Akira is a major milestone for me. I remember that I was into that movie back when anime was called Japanimation over here. And yeah, I'm still nervous about Hollywood ever touching this one. But if I'm going to give somebody the benefit of the doubt, it's probably going to be like somebody like Taika Waititi right now.
Now, I know some people when Ragnarok came out were like, it's a great movie, but it's not like it's not what I wanted from like those Thor, two storylines or from Thor.
Yeah.
Are you going to if he puts that kind of spin, he likes to put inject humor.
Would you
be disappointed?
But I think there's a bit that like Taika, the world of Thor Ragnarok was not wholly envisioned by Taika. Right? Like there's creative teams that sort of go into that and set designers and all that jazz. And he's not necessarily going to have that team, right? And so, like, I think Taika's vision for this, and to be totally honest, I am not convinced that this movie is actually happening until cameras start rolling. This is one of those things where it feels like a pipe dream, and it was like, if we can get the tax credit, maybe we'll do it, but we're not sure if we're going to do it. But anyway, like, I think Taika will approach this in a way that I don't think he wants to. He's done a bunch of interviews that he seems like a genuine fan of this stuff, and I can't imagine he would want to do something so completely off the wall that would, because there's a kind of a stink on live action anime adaptations, and you know, I think Taika is a person who could do it that maybe breaks the curse in a way, but
well, I mean, the curse is, this is a very longer explanation than I was really prepared for. I mean, happens when you bring the
producers. Is this the Duke Nukem Forever?
Of no, I mean, movies? Battle Angel has changed thing. Battle Angel's making money. Right now, we don't know anything yet except that it seems like this is moving forward. I'm nervous. I'm sure a lot of anime fans are nervous. But that's all I'm going to probably invest in right now. So we're going to move on and talk about something that is even more upsetting than the possibility of a Kira movie, which is that Arrow is losing one of its, you know, pillar members of the show. Emily Bett Rickards, who plays Felicity Smoke, has announced she's leaving after this season, which is surprising because the show was coming back for one more season. And you would think, like, they're just going to stick it out and have it. Yeah, and she's a key character, but apparently not. She's moving on, and
she's like, nah, I'm out of here.
Yeah, and it suggests that something drastic is going to happen by the end of this season with Felicity, whether she dies or moves on or decides to do something else, we don't know. It's kind of interesting because they're running this Star City, they're running these parallel storylines in the present and then in the future with her daughter and Oliver's son, you know, kind of uniting for a mission, and she's involved in it. So I'm kind of really interested to see where that leaves Arrow as a show, because we already have her character in these future segments and it kind of leading into this, into the things that are building in the present day, and how they wrap that all up and then come back for a run next season without her is going to be really interesting to see.
I feel like it definitely lays a huge hole in that cast. Like, how do you, like,
she's a, yeah, she's that a role. Crucial part.
Yeah, I mean, it just, I guess, depends on what happens to her and how, and like what path it sends Oliver Queen down for, you know, this final run, and how this all comes up in DC's Crisis, or the Arrowverse Crisis crossover that will, you know, seemingly take Oliver Queen out of the picture and end Arrow. We don't know. But if you've been a fan of Arrow or the Arrowverse, I mean, this is, to borrow an anime phrase, this is in many ways our best girl. And she kind of stepped down. She's been entertaining on the show, not the infamous Olicity relationship, but just her as a character. I mean, who started off kind of as a side character who grew into something much more. And just even off screen on social media and stuff like that, she's been very entertaining.
Which, again, I mean, even her announcement was kind of a surprise out of nowhere in the middle of a Saturday afternoon.
And it was also just unlike any other I'm leaving announcement ever. Yeah. It was like she just starts off with this random poem, and it's just, I didn't know what I was reading halfway through, and then it was like, oh, I'm leaving, by the way. I'm like, oh, all right.
I need to call a crisis counselor? No. yeah, it was just two words. It's like hashtag Rickards out, like, you know.
All right, then.
So, yeah, but she's gone, so it's really coming to an end, folks. This Arrow thing is slowly coming apart and coming to its end. The Arrowverse will never be the same. But hey, we got Batgirl or Batwoman coming, so, you know,
fine.
They're replaceable. So, moving right along, now that we've gone from anime to DC, now we're going to hop over to horror, and you can find all of these wonderful channels on comicbook.com for any of your genre needs. Let's talk about some things that happened in horror the past week. We got a new trailer for Annabelle Comes Home, the third installment of the Annabelle franchise, which has actually turned out to be good. Because, I mean, the first one, the Conjuring films, I really enjoyed. The first Annabelle, I was looking forward to because I love that creepy little doll, but it was kind of weak. And then, against all odds, you know, it's ironic that Shazam is coming up down the pipeline, about to hit theaters, because that director, David F. Sandberg, kind of cut his teeth after doing his own independent horror film that he turned from a short into a full length called Lights Out, which was very good. He stepped into his first big genre or studio film with Annabelle Creation, the sequel, which is actually a prequel to the prequel, you want to follow all that. But turned out to be one of the kind of better and scarier films I've seen in a while. I really kind of hold that dear in my theatrical viewing experience. So I'm kind of excited for this third one. I forget the director's name. Probably should have done that research before we sat down, but it's not Sandberg again. It's some other guy. And this one is kind of Night at the Museum with demonic creatures, basically.
But it's back at the Warren?
Yeah, it's at the Warren's house from The Conjuring, bringing it all back around, where they keep their little room of demonically possessed items. And it's their daughter and some other kind
idiot.
Of teen
some
friend
idiot.
Doing idiot teen stuff.
God.
It's like, don't go in this one room because...
Vet your kid's friends, man. That's bad parenting.
And one kid's friend, and you know, I mean, you can't. Every little teenage, preteen, or teen girl has this friend. I could tell you stories, you know, from real life right now.
I had someone who stole my Gambit trading card out of my room.
That's close to setting loose a bunch of demonic creatures.
I think they're very close.
But so these idiot kids go in there. They set out loose Annabelle, who sets loose everything, and it's a big demon party at the Warren's house. And that looks pretty hairy, so I'm excited for that, and I'm kind of digging that.
It's one of the few horror franchises that I like really enjoy.
Yeah, somehow we've all gotten really invested into this Conjuring verse. Yeah.
It's so crazy that this is The Conjuring is a movie that has spun out. Like, not only its sequels, but, side sequels and its own mini-universe. Like,
now we have adding, like, the sneaking things in there now. The Curse of La Llorona is coming out, and that's also part of it.
And then there's a third Conjuring coming.
Yeah,
that's,
third Conjuring coming out, like, with the Warrens. Yeah, so.
Watch out, MCU.
It's a good time to be a Conjuring fan. Annabelle, looking scary as ever, and now it's just going to be a whole bunch of demons, and that's a cool, easy premise to get behind. But, man, some teens better get killed. The dumb ones better die.
No, that one.
I think this one's rated R, if I believe correctly. It's rated R. I don't know. We'll look it up while we talk. But the other big thing we got is, we have this Child's Play remake coming out. And I don't think it looks that interesting. Nobody is really. I mean, the buzz hasn't been.
I mean, I wasn't until this news came out.
Yes. And now, I can always count on you to blow the reveal right before you're about to say something. This is what happens when you take the producer and put them on the couch. But yes, as producer Jim Viscardi just alluded to, there is a game changer that makes us now care about this new Child's Play, which is that the voice of this new Chucky will be Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill.
Of Star Wars fame, but more importantly for this case, of Batman the Animated Series Joker fame.
Mm-hmm.
So Chucky's going to have one creepy-ass voice, and I am there for it. And just hearing I'm interested if they let Hamill kind of play around with it, ad-lib, do his own thing, and kind of add some lines. I'm here for that. Because I think it's better than anything that's going to come out of this Child's Play script. Mm. So
can I just get an audio drama? Like, I just want him to voice the character in that. I don't want actually want to see the movie.
Like, the only radio show?
Yeah, the only concern I've got about this, and I think it was something Chris Killian made, well, about this specific thing. I think it was something that Chris Killian mentioned in one of the get-ups recently, was I hope that this is just not the Joker in a tiny doll's body, that he like creates a voice that feels a bit unique and distinct and not just.
I'm sure he will. Hamill's kind of one of those actors that he's not just going to probably recycle a Joker voice. He's going to make his own Chucky voice. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to hear what that is, because what's his name? Is it Brad Dourif?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the original Chucky. I mean, he's a great creepy voice actor, and he really made that. I mean, he made that character, and he has owned it from like the 80s, 90s till now.
But I think he's involved in the TV series.
Oh, yes.
Right?
I mean, we're getting too complicated here, but like, yes. Aside from this remake, there is a TV series that kind of continues and that's Chucky.
That is Chucky.
Because they've just rebranded that whole thing as Chucky. And now the original creators, after Cult of Chucky, which hit Netflix a couple years back, they're having their own TV series, which I think is coming to like Sci-Fi or something. I forget where it's coming. But so he'll still be involved. So if you like the classic, that's still out there. But I'm now more interested, meaning interested at all, to see this new remake.
Like, especially if this one makes any bit of money, that means like maybe Mark's going to have to do it again.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he'd be.
You know how those actors hate working.
Tackle on another franchise. I just want to see the next trailer so I can hear him talk.
Yeah,
that's the same, only thing I'm looking forward to, because that other trailer was trash.
Ooh. And that's about all we care about. So moving right along to horror, but on the small screen, The Walking Dead wrapped up season 9 this past week. And
did it?
Yeah. Yes, it did. I know you know, because we're not paying for that After the Dead show right now. We still have a couple months to recoup that budget. But that's not throwing shade. I love After the Dead. I was about to say, we're not going to go too much into the finale, because Brandon Davis and Janelle Wheeler do an excellent job for our show After the Dead, our recap show. So you can go watch the latest episodes of that and how they wrap up the season and all the things they tease for season 10. But I will say that, I mean, yeah, I am a professional, at least when the camera's on. But we will say, we got to talk about the fact that the ratings have come back, and The Walking Dead has scored its lowest finale ratings yet, with about 5 million viewers. And more importantly, like a kind of low rating of 1.9 in the 18 to 49 demographic, which is the hot stuff for genre, for kind of geek culture genre stuff. But at the same time, like, are we that surprised? This was the year Rick Grimes left. The show is kind of establishing its new footing. I mean, it's kind of a statistical prediction that with the major star leaving, you're going to lose a certain portion of your audience. And it's not quite an event thing. And also, the penultimate episode of season 9 was the real kind of headline buzz generator with people getting their heads mm-hmm. on pikes.
Yeah.
Now, this was kind of a boring epilogue. Snow piercer light, like, or the Revenant, whatever you want to compare it to. Like, we're hiking through the snow. And it wasn't, I mean, the return, I mean, the, just the buzz back was that this wasn't a very exciting finale, right?
That's not all bad news, though.
No. I think, and this is why I brought it up, because I think there's this kind of
this has been
fun
one of the best
dichotomy
seasons.
Happening right now is that people like us are seeing this, and like, I know there's a kind of a cult following growing that's like, wow, The Walking Dead feels really revitalized, really exciting, and is interesting to watch again in some ways, more so than we've had in like many seasons. And we've discussed this over and over again internally here. It's like you took away the main character, you kind of open in just a reliance on having to constantly be centered around Rick and Carl and that whole thing, and like,
Carl.
So you take that away and like you open it up, and now it's a much more interesting, unpredictable kind of story where you can go in many different directions. Even though some actors are obviously safe, it still feels like no character is necessarily safe because no character is the cornerstone character anymore. And so I kind of like it. I think both Fear and the main Walking Dead show have taken, maybe we'll see if it's too late, but kind of taken some important turns in like the last year, and I'm liking it. But
like, I'm a lapsed fan, and this is really like these last, like, seeing all the positive response these last, like, this last second half of the season has gotten, I'm kind of like, do I want to maybe start watching concurrently next season?
And that's a good thing. Like, you can take pick up after Rick leaves and start season 9B, and it's like just coming into, I mean, you literally are coming into a different show because it's a 6-year time jump.
And also, this is not how we, just a quick aside because I know we got to move well, but I don't know about you guys, but there are like two shows that I watch live.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It'll be really interesting to see what the live plus 3 ratings come in at, and see if streaming and on-demand numbers boost that up.
Because evidently they've grown a lot.
Won't be a ton, but like shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are live and die by those L3 numbers. And
I don't watch live TV anymore, unless I have to. Like, it's just like,
there's very few. I mean, we don't even call it live TV. I mean, there's like either event TV or DVR TV.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's how we do it. I mean, that's just the modern thing. And yeah, Walking Dead has kind of recaptured some of that event TV status this season with the Rick thing leaving, with the kind of whole reveal of this penultimate episode with the kills and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's still kind of hanging on to that, but
I mean, there are shows that would kill for these ratings.
Yeah. So
5 million doesn't sound bad when you isolate it. It's only when you compare it to the 18 million that like, then you go, oof. Yeah,
I mean, this is also a show approaching its 10th season. So like I said, there's a statistical amount of wear and tear that you got to calculate for in all these, but we're still loving The Walking Dead. So we hope if you guys fell off because you didn't have faith in it, maybe in the off season or Netflix or whatever you catch up. And we'll see what happens in season 10, because now I'm interested in season 10 and to see how this new kind of cast of characters takes on this new army of villains, the Whisperers, and what all goes down with that.
Whisperers. All right, moving right along.
So stay tuned, because when we come back, Matt is going to tell us what's hot on comic book shelves this week. And we are going to break down all the crazy things in this latest Avengers Endgame trailer.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
All right, so Matt, it's your time to shine, buddy.
All right,
what's going on in comics, and what should we be on the lookout for this week?
So there's a lot of interesting books this week. If you are a Marvel fan, War of the Realms number one is the kind of giant one. They've been building up to it for a couple months now.
Sounds like some realms are going to war.
Prepare. I mean, this one especially.
All 10 of them.
If you are a Thor fan or have even cared remotely about kind of the Thor mythos of the last few years.
I've been wondering what's been having in Neville at a year.
Boy, the first page alone, it like tests every amount of like pronunciation skill I had. It was like, it goes all throughout every realm. I'm like, I can't even pronounce it. But it's really interesting. There's a lot of crazy stuff. So I will say at this point, we're going to label this a spoiler discussion because, so if you have not read it yet,
comic spoilers,
turn away,
pause, come back.
Because one of the most interesting things in this book is Loki. So I don't know if you remember.
No.
There was a thing in
Just pretend I don't know what's going
on. Okay. So what was it, Ultimatum, that moment reminded me of?
Yes.
Okay.
Because when the blob.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the blob bit essentially a person, a hero, in half, right? So in
wasn't it Wasp?
It was Wasp, yeah. So in this book.
Thanks, Jeff Loeb.
Which I thought they would never touch because of the reaction it got. Uh-huh. Oh, no. In this book, a frost giant literally sticks Loki in his mouth and crunches him.
Not just a frost giant. Lawfrey, yes, his dad.
I mean, that's some Greek tragedy stuff right there.
Just.
Titans often ate their
And you
children.
See his legs dangling? Oh, gosh. Like, that was brutal, man.
But it's Loki, so really anything.
Yeah, he's probably not dead. But but in any case, it makes an impression. We also get the first part of the book. Odin gets, like, sinister stabbed by like six crazy evil children. It's like something out of a James Wan horror pick. It's kind of creepy. The thing is, though, it brings all the war to Earth. So you get to see like all these street level heroes. You see Spider-Man, you see Daredevil, you see people like that showing up and fighting alongside what's left of the Asgardians against like Malekith and all these different rulers of the different realms, right?
It kind of happens way, like, it's an oversized book,
yeah,
but like it feels like it happened way too fast.
That first act, there was so much happening.
Yeah.
Like, I actually had to go back through and go, like, okay, where did this character... And, like, Ghost Rider just pops up out of nowhere, and he's just in the panel, and he's like, man, I just got here. Like, they even go out of their way to explain. Like, there's no context. But honestly, I really dug it. I was prepared not to like it, because this is one of those events. You look at the back of the book.
Like, here are 65 tie-in issues.
Yeah, here's 9 things you got to take care of in April alone. And I'm like, oh, Jesus. But... it's getting off to a really interesting start.
Yeah.
I really dug it. Like, I dug it as a book. So
do love that Russell Dodderman art, though.
That's pretty. So that's the big one this week. Also, if you're a DC fan, The Green Lantern number 6. Why do you hate on
Don't get sucked down. Just keep going.
Book.
Just keep going. We got to get
through Grant Morrison and Liam Sharp. And, oh, my God. So if you're so this is a like kind of a deep cut. And I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this correctly. I think it's Merwin.
I think
that's how you say it. So Morrison does one of his like Morrison things and like pulls out a deep cut of this magician that like he hasn't been in Rebirth. He hasn't been used anywhere for like so long. And he just picks him out and he's going to like do something crazy with him. This book is weird, but like in the best way. If you're like a Green Lantern fan, it even manages to like bring in Adam Strange into like something that makes sense and is not just this, you know, esoteric space stuff. Like, it's good. Like, it's really good. So if you are a Green Lantern fan, unlike Jim, you should give this book a shot. It's only on issue 6, too, so you can catch up.
Only on issue 6, but it's also a Grant Morrison book, so it's going to take you 2 years.
Okay, that's true. But next is actually, so I think I'm in the minority that is liking this. It's the Terminus arc, which is running through Teen Titans and Deathstroke. It is a weird pairing, but like if you hate Damian Wayne, you're probably not going to like this series. I tend to kind of love the curmudgeon that he is, and he's essentially been keeping villains down in his basement, chained, chained
that
up.
That sounds like a Damien thing.
Right? So he's made his own little prison, and he hadn't told anybody about it except for one other person. So he puts Deathstroke in this, and in this weird sort of way, Deathstroke kind of starts to become his mentor because he kind of sees a little bit of
Hannibal Lecter type deal?
It's like he breaks out, but he's still over the voice comm like, you should do this. You should totally do this.
Shut up! Screaming, damn
it! It's got that kind of weird feel to it. So I've really enjoyed it.
You kind of sold me. That sounds interesting. I want to read that.
It's kind of weird. We also have Jim's best friend, Rob Liefeld, brought a which is this is I love the story
Mr.
behind
Legs.
This. I love the story behind this, by the way. So Major X is a character from literally he created in 1992. That was like he just shelved a pitch and never brought it up. Like he was like, I'm good. They're going in a different direction, whatever. And then now he gets to do it, which is kind of pimp, right? It's kind of cool that he gets to pull out of the drawer all these years later. Essentially, if you like all the Liefeld verse, I'll call it, right? So like Deadpool, Cable, he loves Wolverines. Wolverine's in there. Domino, like those,
like a bad A looking Wolverine.
Yeah, too. His Wolverine's good. So like all of this is combined into the story of like who is Major X. Major X has this crazy backstories like from the existence and it's the whole pocket thing. It's very like he goes kind of epic with it, but then brings it back. It's all these street level characters essentially.
It feels like a good X-Men event.
Yeah, but it's pretty self-contained. Mm-hmm. So you don't, unlike World of Realms, you don't have to go buy 15 issues. Like, so the first issue comes out this week.
But I'm wondering about this one.
Yeah, but it takes place in main continuity. And quite honestly, like Rob's a good friend of mine, but this is probably some of his best work. And I'm actually really excited to see he's got, you know, Brett Peoples and Wills Portacio doing the filler issues. And I haven't seen Wills' interior stuff in a while. And I'm kind of excited to see it.
Like
so.
Stuff.
Yeah, it's been a while.
When you get to see
that
it.
Name.
Just a couple quick bits. Amazing Spider-Man number 18 is the next chapter in Hunted, which is the Kraven storyline, which is actually...
I just caught up on this. It's actually really fun.
It's fun. Yeah. It took a very different... Like, because they built it up in the epilogue.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was going to be kind of this more moody thing, kind of like some of Kraven's bigger stories, but it's not. It's very not lighthearted, is the wrong term, but it's different than what I would have, you know, killing people on a on a big field and stuff. It's not lighthearted, but it has a different feel than I thought. So I've been really enjoying the series.
It's kind of like Hunger Games with a little bit of Ender's Game in it, in a way, where like the premise is basically like, what is it? It's Arcade, right?
It's Arcade who's working with him.
Right.
And essentially it's the... It really is Hunger Games. It's the best way to.
And they're selling like VR murder bots for you to like basically put on a helmet and go and
they're running
kill some heroes and villains.
Kraven is essentially this dude who has started this ring of hey, come and hunt these villains and do it yourself. Don't buy all these henchmen and have to do it for you. Like just come do it and we'll set everything up for you. Right. And then Black Suit Spider-Man gets thrown in to the mix. Also, Marvel Team Up. Miss Marvel and Spidey, which I always shout out Miss Marvel and Spidey because that's an awesome combo. Also, we were talking about earlier, so it made sense to mention here, Walking Dead number 190 is also out. So I kind of stopped reading the Walking Dead books. I kind of fell off after the Whisper, like
the Whisper
saga.
Yeah, so did I.
So that's kind of where I stopped. I've heard, though, they've picked up. I know Brandon reads them every month. So, I mean, I've heard good things that it's really good. So if you do want to jump in back in, you can always do that. So.
Okay. And so that's comics this week. Thank you, Matt. So today we will end talking about Avengers Endgame's new trailer, which is the special look trailer or trailer 3 or whatever you want to call it.
They call it a special look. Which is like, what is that? I don't know what the hell that I fully expected.
Basically mean like we're going to show you a little something this time.
I expect like one of those weird production featurettes where everyone just talks. And
I mean, that's how I think people saw it at first because I sent it to like five people and they were like, I don't got time to watch this.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, this is the most epic trailer yet. And they were like, oh, click.
It's not a normal featurette where they talk like half an hour about the armor.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you'll care about this one.
So they slipped it under the radar, but we got it. And basically, this trailer, we'll talk about what it shows, and then we'll talk about what we think it really is not showing and hiding.
You are in full tinfoil.
I am. Hey, man, the readers have done this to me.
There is also a chance that by the time people are listening to this, they may still not have gotten through Fandango to buy their tickets.
Yeah, I mean, those tickets are on sale, but good luck right now.
I don't know if we've actually been able to or not.
Has there been any movie that has taken down a major movie website to buy tickets other than this?
Did Infinity War?
Yeah, I mean,
it took down Fandango for a little bit, but like,
there's
AMC website's been down for hours.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's always trouble getting tickets for major event movies, but no, I don't think anything as anticipated as this one, and nor should there be.
Right.
I mean, this is a real scramble. I told somebody who was like, oh, I think I'm going to wait till like the second weekend. I was like, you are never going to last that long. The entire world's going to tell you everything that happens in this movie. Like, I was like, Monday, Tuesday, the latest. You need to be in that theater. Yeah. Like, skip some work. Go see it. Just get it out of the way so you could just be in the know and have a good viewing experience. Like, because spoilers are coming. Like, I mean, the internet's just going to be filled with memes that are going to tell you the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure, in fact, we might even have to do an article where we just piece together all the spoilers of the film and just memes. No direct spoilers, just people posting vague things that tell you everything nonetheless. But anyway, so this new trailer basically sets it up. I mean, all the trailers have said, you know, we got to fix this, we got to do this, but it has shown us no real conflict. This trailer fixes that because it shows us the surviving Avengers. We get the big reveal that Tony and Nebula make it back to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
They reconnect, which I had a big tinfoil hat on about. I didn't think Tony was going to make it. I thought he was going to die in space, but I was totally wrong. He makes it back to Earth, and he starts marshaling the Avengers, saying, we got to go, you know, we got to handle this. It's up to us. Like, we got to do this. And so the trailer makes it look like they all board a ship and they bring the fight to Thanos and go onto his ship to kick his ass, and then they have to kind of throw down with him and the Mad Titan. But of course, as usual, there's more than meets the eye here. But we got some big iconic things that we've been waiting for. Like I said, Tony comes back to Earth. He and Pepper reconnect. You know, the Iron Man, Captain America stands finally got a shot of their moment where Tony and
Steve, do you trust me?
Oh yeah, my God.
Where Tony and Steve are basically face to face, and Tony says, do you trust me? And Steve says, of course I do. And they shake hands, and like everybody's like, squee, you know, Civil War, we've healed the wounds. Like, you know, that big moment. We see Thanos for the first time.
But even that moment we have questions about.
Now, of course, we're going to get to all that. But like, yeah, we see Thanos for the first time in the film. He's got armor, a new bladed weapon.
I don't like his new armor.
I mean, I never liked
that
armor.
Weapon.
Yeah, that cool. Weapon looks cool as hell. Like, it's like a Darth Maul non-laser sword, but like, yeah, so we see them all in this, yeah, we're doing battle with Thanos. We see a reunion of the original trilogy from the first Avengers movie from that forest scene when they're battling over Loki, only this time it's with Thanos. And yeah, I mean, this is the most epic, like, yeah, we're going on this epic mission to kick some butt.
That score was
trailer.
Awesome.
And the music is just rousing, it'll get you all emotional, but as usual, not all is seemingly what it seems in this trailer.
Could all be fake.
Yeah, it could all be fake, and I think a lot of it is fake. I've been on this tinfoil hat theory for a long time, breaking down every new merchandise and trailer that suggests that, no, the Avengers don't load up and go up to Thanos' ship, at least in what we're seeing in this trailer, that they plan to do something like that when Tony and Nebula get back, because Nebula knows where Thanos is, but that, in fact, Thanos warps down, and that's an important key word, warps down into Earth and ambushes them in Avengers compound, leading to a situation where we see from the 3D trailer of the second trailer, a 3D version of it, that Hawkeye is in these tunnels underneath the base, seemingly, and sets off an explosion, which may then tie back to an explosion we saw in trailer 2 with Ant-Man and the base blowing up.
Pencil and all that.
Yeah, and having to kind of escape the blast. And in both trailer 2 and 3, the Avengers doing battle with what we now know as Thanos and the Outriders, because we see the Outriders both in merchandising, toy sets for this sequence, and in the tunnels in the 3D trailer with Hawkeye, that they blow the base because they're being overrun, essentially, and that they then battle Thanos and do all this outside the rubble of Avengers compound. And the last shot of the trailer with him sitting there is like him, his armor looks a little damaged, he's not wearing his helmet, his sword's just kind of plunged in the ground. My theory is that they have to blow the base and sacrifice it because it's being overrun. and to kind of give themselves a chance and to try to take out or hurt Thanos, and they do because he probably gets caught in the blast. And this all raises so many questions. And so I think I've always said this is early on in the film. This is like the end of Act One. Like at the end of the first hour, I think this takes place, this Avengers compound attack, when everybody's reunited and they're getting ready to do, and it's this first major twist, and then it just kicks off from there. And I'm questioning whether they're going to battle Thanos. Like it shows us like the Trinity, Captain America, Thor, and Iron Man are going to battle Thanos right here. But it doesn't look like Thanos is ready for like a fight or itching for one, like right at that moment. He's just kind of sitting down. And we had a Build-A-Bear reveal merchandise that suggests that, you know, we won't tell you the full reason why or what he says, but like the audio for the Build-A-Bear suggests that Thanos might not even be either in control of or in possession of the Infinity Gauntlet any longer, which, you know, is curious because there are a lot of questions about what we see in this trailer, right? Mm-hmm. Like he warps onto the battlefield,
right?
But it's the spaceship kind of, you know.
Yeah, there were even some folks trying to, there are some folks online saying it may even be Bifrost.
Yeah, which, it looked kind of Bifrost-ish. Yeah. Like if that's a thing.
I don't know how I don't know how he gets Bifrost, but
yeah,
that's fine.
It's some other kind of form of transport. It's not the space stone. I mean, right.
It is not a warp.
Clear visual signature in Infinity War of when he uses the space stone to open a portal and walk through.
Yeah.
And that's not what this is. Like he has to warp. He's using a bladed weapon. He's back in armor. Mm-hmm. Like all of these things, summate to suggest that no, he doesn't have this weapon of ultimate power anymore.
Or if he did, it truly is broken.
Yeah, and it's broken after the snap. So, yeah, that's a major thing because that ties back to a lot of questions about, is there this other threat in the universe? Who or what would it be? Is somebody else in possession of the Infinity Gauntlet now? What's that? Or does somebody eventually get possession of it and get it working again? Who's not Thanos? And who would that be? And kind of what transpires.
So well, it's kind of nuts because the whole other aspect of what we believe to be a major part of this movie, they have not touched on once in any of the trailers.
No.
And that's the time travel aspect and or quantum realm stuff.
Or have they? Because
just
before we came in here, I was just getting this article hammered out. The big scene that they use, and it's brilliant misdirection if this turns out to be true, which is having Cap and Tony have this reunion moment that's so heartfelt, but may also be totally not what we think it is. Mm-hmm. It looks like this is present day Captain America and Tony Stark kind of reconnecting and they're in a city street, right? Like, and they're having this conversation and they're clasping hands. But there's people theorizing that Cap has been digitally altered in this shot to cover up the fact that this is actually Captain America from the Battle of New York. Mm-hmm. And that this scene is kind of a Back to the Future moment. Back to the Future 2, rather, where Tony Stark comes back to the Battle of New York and him saying to this version of Cap, like, do you trust me? And him being like, of course I do.
Yeah.
Is because this is the Cap who never went through Age of Ultron or Civil War, all these things that caused him and Tony to have this big break. And he's basically coming there and trying to convince Cap and these other Avengers to do something to alter the timeline.
So right. Because don't they... They don't give away. Well, they kind of give away the Tesseract. They give it back to Thor, and Thor goes back, takes it back up to
Asgard
at the end. But this, I would imagine, would be an instance of them probably trying to get the Tesseract before it goes kind of anywhere,
and then thus eliminating that he ever has all the stones.
Has all the stones.
It's an interesting theory.
Yeah, I mean, it's the easiest one to mess with because all it did was sit in Odin's vault.
Right.
Until
Ragnarok. All the other ones have very complicated...
Yeah, anything to mess with anything else would be to kind of... To mess with the Mind Stone means you eliminate Vision.
Mm-hmm.
To like mess with Reality Stone, you know, everything else kind of really screws things up. But you can mess with a Tesseract
and
pluck it out because it was just sitting somewhere, literally. Yeah. If you pluck it out, then like, that first scene... And that could also bring back Loki.
I just had a total like... This could be a thing where, like, let's say they do that and they keep the Tesseract on, like, either underground or wherever the Avengers compound is. And that's why Thanos shows up, because maybe he knows that that's where it is and he's come back to try and get it.
Oh, yeah.
Because he wouldn't have it. Like, I would imagine it would just kind of disappear off his gauntlet.
Yeah.
And so he won't be able to use the Space Stone. And so he's trying to come back to get the Space Stone, and that's where it is. because they got it from time travel.
And I think it's going to be something like that. There was some kind of early on, like, because, I mean, Back to the Future 2 has been dropped in mention with this movie.
It's one of Feige's favorite movies.
Exactly. And if you know anything about Back to the Future 2, this is what it is. They go into a future where everything's kind of screwed up, and they realize they have to go back into the past to fix something because something they brought back from the future basically screwed up the timeline, and it creates this dark timeline where Biff is like basically Donald Trump. Yeah, which is great. Anyway, we won't get into all that, but like, yeah. And they have to revisit the first film and like redo the first film with him coming back to the past in the first film, but then a different version of him coming back to that past to like interact on top of his original traveling back self. And Back to the Future does a great job of making it simple and fun to go through all this. But like, yeah, when you really stop to like explain what Marty McFly is doing here, I mean, that's why that chalkboard scene is so great, right? It's just like real simple. Here's a timeline. We made another one. Let's X this one out and make sure we get back to this one. So like, yeah. Yeah. So that seems like we're going to have something like that in this movie. And that would jive with the
Build-A-Bear thing too.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that would, I mean, how it's just about the execution. When I think we just figured it out,
guys.
I mean, that's that. Those all those pieces do. I might have to give the tinfoil some credit here.
Yeah, I mean, but it's just about execution. So if they can do this in a way that doesn't break your brain, like something like Looper, like, yeah, this will be good. And it also, it then creates what we've been speculating about, a whole new MCU timeline in which, like, you know, we know nothing. And I've said for a long time, I hope this movie kind of, if they don't do like a post-credit scene to let you know the exciting things this new MCU timeline will bring, then I hope they just end it with like a flash of white, knowing that it has been restored or altered in some way, and we have no idea. And Spider-Man Far From Home is our first clues.
Drove me crazy. But it does a really good job. I hate it, because I hate that, like just leaving it up to my imagination. However, it's so good when it's done right.
Eventually, they're going to show you all the ins and outs of how things are different.
Well, right. Well, but like, that's also the kind of thing, too, where like this could also set up a Infinity Watch / Illuminati type thing where certain members of, you know, certain members remember, and they're the ones who are tasked to making sure that the stones don't
exactly
together again.
And they can cherry pick along the timeline of people they want to tweak.
Yeah,
actors they want to replace. It gives them that opening to just go in and slightly but surely set them up for the next 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
interesting. Oh man, what if they end it with like Cap dying, and then they change it all, and then like either Bucky or Falcon have been Cap the entire time, and that's just the new status quo.
I mean, that's the thing. That's why it's exciting. That's why I hope they don't kind of show you anything at first, because I hope you have to learn about it in pieces.
Yeah,
and with each piece, and like if Spider-Man Far From Home doesn't mention anything, but just says like, oh yeah, you know, I want to be like Captain America, and you see a poster on the wall, and it's like Bucky. Like everybody would be like, oh my god,
they would never mention.
They wouldn't go too deep into it, because to them that's
right, that's always, they've always the way known.
It's been and it's us and who would be
one,
like,
and
yeah,
there's one or two people though that know
exactly and would be burdened and kind of crazy by the fact that they remember,
like Doctor Strange
and like Doctor Strange or Tony Selvig. Stark Eric Selvig or Tony Stark basically retires. Yeah, Tony Stark retires and his job is like protecting stones or like whatever. So yeah, finally, just on a kind of somber note for this, we learned prior to this new trailer coming that, yeah, Endgame is looking like it will most likely be Stan Lee's final, definitely MCU cameo and Marvel movie cameo altogether, because there's not one in X-Men. We know that for a fact, for Dark Phoenix. And weirdly, like, as somber as that's going to be and sad, it is very fitting.
It's so fitting.
It's so fitting that he made it, like, all the way to Endgame.
Yeah.
And then, like, there'll be a new MCU timeline, possibly, that doesn't have Stan Lee cameos.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I mean, I think that's going to be more emotional than I'm prepared for when I actually see it. Like, I'm going to come out of the mat. But I think that
well, it was like seeing that tribute that they did in the Marvel logo for Captain Marvel. Like,
that was awesome.
Like, I went in expecting it, and then it wasn't even until I saw it where I was like, oh, damn, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this would be, I mean, man, I feel like there's not going to be dry eyes over that one. No. Like,
That's one of those Paul Walker moments.
Whatever he says in that scene is going to carry so much weight till the end of time, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, every one of those lines, most of those lines have been, like, kind of, like, on the surface, just kind of, you know, whatever, but sometimes, like, deep.
Yeah. I hope it's not something like, oh, I nearly peed myself or something like that. That'd be horrible. But all right, that'll take us to the end of this episode of Comic Book Nation. As I said at the start, you can subscribe to our RSS feed when we post new articles every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com, or you can go to your favorite listening place, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Sorry, Matt, still no Amazon
and Google. Music. Google Podcasts.
Oh, we're on Google Podcasts?
We're on Google Podcasts.
Hey, man, I don't get these updates always. We're on Google Podcasts, y'all, so you can find us there. Still no Amazon Music.
Nope.
If you want Amazon Music, send stuff to Matt.
It's so weird. Amazon, just get on board. Get on that podcast train.
Anyway, but we... that just threw me off.
If you want to
just catch up with us and talk with us over social media about anything in the show, you can find us on Twitter at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can talk to us individually. You can find me at Kofi Outlaw. That's K-O-F-I, Outlaw.
Matt Mueller, CB.
Jim Viscardi.
And if you like the show, please be so kind as to give us a great review on any one of those sites. And we, at the end of, every other show or so, we read some of these reviews and you can get some comic book swag. So if you like the show, like I said, and you've been riding with us, please do just take the time and leave us a review, because we appreciate it and we will show you that appreciation back. That'll do it for us, and we'll catch you on the next episode of Comic Book Nation. Everybody have a good time.
Deuce.
See you.